Hi, this is John Reed, the Uncensored Week in Sports. We are looking at the November 25th edition. I'm sorry I'm starting late tonight. Unfortunately, that screws up any chance of getting my callers because it's pretty late on Sunday night. And I got tied up at a birthday party and just got off schedule. But I am going to try to kick these off at 7 Eastern time every Sunday, and I'm going to try to be pretty good about it. So make sure you sign up for an email to get notified if there's a change or hop on the chat room, but I am going to try to hit that time on a regular basis. Tonight, I have a few bones to pick. I don't know if I'm going to get to them all, but I definitely have some things I want to cover, including the BCS mess, why I'm having a hard time being a Red Sox fan, not for the reasons you would expect, probably, and why I have an issue with announcers who have ridiculous agendas. So, I've also got a nice treat for you, a rant against an author-writer named Greg Easterbrook. So, look forward to sharing that with you at the end of this little session. So, let's see. I guess I can start with the BCS mess. As I've announced on this broadcast before, I am not a BCS guy. I think it's a corrupt system. It's hypocritical and underscores the financial greediness and incompetence of college football. But what I like to see is I like to see a team wreck the BCS system by perhaps going undefeated when it shouldn't or what have you. But now we have the opposite problem, which is that now enough teams have lost that the system seems like it's working again. If 2 1-loss teams play for the title that are clearly the best teams, then the BCS system is not discredited. So right now we do have 2 teams that fit that description, Missouri and West Virginia, in the number 1 and 2 spots. So I'm hopeful that both those teams shall lose. I think Missouri's playing Oklahoma. If both those teams lose and take on a second loss, and then maybe Ohio State wins, who everyone breathlessly said was completely out of the picture a few weeks ago. So let's say Ohio State wins, and then they have to play a 2-loss team of undecided merit. What a mess that will be. But we'll need 2 teams to lose for the BCS mess to happen. So rooting against Missouri and against West Virginia next week. So that's the BCS rant. On the Patriots side of the ball, we saw the Pats win a nail-biter today against the Eagles that came up with a great game plan. And this brings up one of the things that really bothers me in sports right now is the idea that you didn't play as well if you didn't get as good a result. It's like, yeah, so we know that you spanked the Dolphins. That doesn't mean you played better. It means the Dolphins sucked. You had trouble against Philly because Philly's got one of the best defensive schemes in the league when they're playing well. So it was like with the Colts game where it was like, yeah, Brady and Manning didn't have their best games or whatever. It's like, yeah, of course they didn't because the opposing defenses gave them trouble. So they slipped a little bit, and that's what happened. So tonight, after the game, you hear these announcers, and they get into their agendas where they think they figure something out. So a couple of highlight guys are like, yeah, they were like, who's the quarterback? Feely. They were like, Feely outplayed Brady tonight, except for the beginning and the end of the game. Well, yeah, because Feely threw a really important interception for a touchdown in the beginning and the end, and he threw 3 picks overall, though you can't really count the last one. So Feely had a better game except for the 3 interceptions, and Tom Brady threw none. So these are the kinds of things where it's like, guys, listen, of course, in certain tight games, you got a lot of pressure on Tom Brady in that game. You made him uncomfortable in the pocket. He threw more than 50 times and didn't throw an interception. Yeah, I'd say he had a pretty good game. Oh, but he only got 1 touchdown pass. Well, actually, he really almost got 2. One of them was called back on a pretty dicey offensive pass interference call on Randy Moss. Maybe there was a push, maybe there wasn't, hard to say, but okay, so if he has that, then he has 2 touchdown passes, and you have nothing to say about it. So the whole thing is just kind of funny to me. It's like, yeah, didn't have a good game. Actually, he did. Brady was blitzed constantly. He got rid of ball to the right people. He figured out the defense and got the job done. He won the game. Yeah, he had a bad game. But, of course, his quarterback rating wasn't nearly as good as it has been. Yeah, right. So some secondaries are better. They take your guys away. They blitz you. They confuse you. You don't play as well against that. But that doesn't mean you had a worse game. You just didn't rack up the gaudy stats. This is why the stats geeks are so annoying. So, oh, you had a worse game. I had him on my fantasy team. He cost me that one. No, he didn't cost you. Whatever. He played a great game. He played a savvy game. But in a way, I was glad this game happened because maybe some of the talk about how this is one of the best teams of all time will go away. This is a championship team. I think it has a good chance to win a championship, the Pats, this year. But best team of all time? Come on. It's one of the best offenses of all time. The defense has some work to do. The defense has some flaws. They've got an aging linebacker core. I think a little bit of that got exposed today. They have some problems in the secondary if they can't get enough pressure on the quarterback. It's a good defense. It's a bend-but-don't-break defense. Makes some plays. It's not an all-time defense. Come on. So, and by the way, for an all-time offense, wouldn't it be nice to have a better running game? Running game's pretty good. The guys, when they give him the ball, they do pretty well. But, you know, Maroney shows flashes of brilliance, but I don't think there's any doubt that they should have taken Joseph Addai in the draft instead of Maroney at this point. We can wait a couple years to be sure, but I think we can be pretty certain. So, whatever. It's a great team. It's fun to watch. They're not the best team of all time. Give me a break. So, having said that, I think there is a good chance they could go undefeated. They're going to have to beat some good teams, but I think they could definitely go undefeated this year. That won't make them the best team of all time, though. Not in my opinion. Anyway, so that's one of the topics I wanted to cover. The pass interference topic is a funny one because I just think, like, pass interference calls just have way too much impact on games. I wish the NFL was more like college where it was a 15-yard penalty instead of these game-changing penalties. And maybe I'll get back to that when a game that really matters is decided on pass interference penalties again partially. I just don't see how you can put 60, 70 yards of power in the official's hands. So it doesn't make any sense to me. Okay, I want to talk about the Red Sox. Now, you know, you might think, well, you know, John Reed's saying it's hard to be a Red Sox fan. What a whiner. You know, what more do you want? You know, you won two rings in 4 years. Quit, you know, quit feeling sorry. You know, most fans would love to be in your shoes or whatever. Don't get me wrong, I suppose that's true. It's a lot more fun rooting for the Red Sox than the Kansas City Royals. But that's part of the problem I have with the Major League Baseball right now is, like, after we won the Rockies series, you know, I heard from a couple of my friends who are Rockies fans who live out in Colorado. I think I'd had, like, a gentleman's wager with one of them, and so they were, you know, congratulating me or whatever. And I emailed one of them back, and I said, you know what, like, the Rockies' payroll is less than 25% of the Red Sox payroll, so who's the better team? And he emailed me back, and he was like, wow, I can't believe you said that. You know, all the other Red Sox fans I know are kind of gloating, lording this victory. And I was like, well, listen, it was a great win. I think Terry Francona is a fantastic, underrated manager as far as the folksy way he knows how to manage his egos and kind of gets his clubhouse on the same page, believes in his players. I think he's really underrated. I love watching him. It seems like the Red Sox, after some organizational chaos, have developed a really well-thought management philosophy. They've signed some pretty wacky free agents, but overall, their farm system investments have really paid off, and they've done a real good job of not holding on to players too long. So, yeah, there's a level of competency and leadership that shines through in these victories, but it's not a level playing field. It'd be a little bit like if you had, like, say you were going to have a playground tournament with four teams. You get a bunch of kids together, and you're going to have two teams, and then the two teams are going to play, and then the championship game, the winners of those two teams play. So you got four teams you're going to pick. So you let the captains pick, but in this case, you let one team pick four players first, and that would be the Yankees. Then you let two or three players go to the next team, and that would be the Red Sox. And then from there, you go pick by pick to the end. You say, oh, you know, there's parity in baseball because the Rockies got to the World Series. And, you know, admittedly, some of these teams with low payrolls can go pretty far sometimes if they make good decisions. But is it really right that of the top five free agents on the market, five of them, all five, went to either the Yankees or the Red Sox? That's a freaking joke. So to me, it's hard to really get excited about baseball as a fan because it doesn't feel like a true meritocracy. Whereas in the NFL, where there's a pretty strict salary cap and where, you know, people are guided by the same overall spending guidelines and salary cap rules, you really can excel based on the quality of your organization, savviness of your draft picks, blah, blah, blah. So the Patriots are a team that, you know, Spygate aside, you know, one way or the other, how do you feel about that? Still a very efficient, well-run organization that knows what they're doing, has a game plan, and sticks with it. And there are other franchises that do the same. Indianapolis, to some degree, the Eagles have been that kind of a franchise. So you get these teams that are very well-run with a particular philosophy. I guess the Pats and the Colts have the most college graduates of any teams in the NFL. So you have a certain approach, you stick with it, you draft those kinds of players, you sign them to the right kinds of deals, and you win. And to me, that's what sports at that level should be about. Level playing field type of competition. Not one team gets to pick the first four or five players off the playground, and then you go from there. So I think baseball is really flawed that way, and I don't know how much that affects ratings or if that bothers other people besides me, but for me, even as a fan of the Red Sox, I don't take the same joy in those championships. Obviously, 2004 was a little bit different just because it was so overdue, and the way in which they came back from the Yankees and stuff was really an emotional experience as a fan, obviously, but you know, it's now it's kind of like, well, whatever. We're almost supposed to win at this point with the kind of money we have and the way we spend it. So I think I really take something away from the game. And unfortunately, the baseball management will not be able to fix this because the players' union in baseball has secured such a powerful position in negotiations that the kind of concessions that will lead to a hard cap and really help the game are never going to happen. So congratulations to the Baseball Players Association and to baseball management for creating this intractable situation. I love watching the Celtics play. I don't know if the Celtics are a championship team. I have been impressed by how much the people around the Big Three are playing better as a result of being near the Big Three. And to me, what's refreshing about the Celtics right now is just team basketball, good defense, defense that's much better than some people think, and an offense where they're just moving the ball, making the extra pass, finding the open guy. And that's just a joy to watch. I listened to Colin Cowherd, who I think is one of the more savvy commentators, but not in the NBA, really, because he doesn't really follow it, say that the Celtics couldn't go all the way because they didn't have the defensive abilities. But actually, they're leading the league in defensive field goal percentage right now. Regardless of whether you're a fan of the Celtics or not, it's really fun to watch the way they're playing ball because it's a team ball kind of a game. It's not about individual isolations and breakdowns, breaking down your guy and going to the hole. It's about making the extra pass, clogging the lane, and working together as a team. So if that's the kind of basketball you like, you should definitely be checking out the Celtics this season because it's really fun to watch. And it's really neat to see these three veterans kind of taking the lead. And Paul Pierce, for example, just really concentrating on his defense and his rebounds. He's not a great defender, but he's filling up the stat sheet. He had a couple of games last week where it was like 26, 5, 3. So that's the kind of all-around play that's going to get you pretty far. I don't know if they can win at all. I think the Pistons are good, and I think the Magic proved that they might be a team to reckon with if their young guys are savvy enough in the postseason. So, but it's just kind of neat to see that kind of team basketball being played, and obviously it's not the only team. The Suns do a really neat job of that out in the West, and while the San Antonio Spurs are not always that much fun to watch, they certainly espouse many of the same principles. So that's not the only example of it, but it's kind of fun. I have to tell you, after so many years, I mean, I watched so many of these Celtics games during these bad years, during the M.O. Carr years. Oh, my God. Just inventing new ways to lose, like, every single time. It's really funny. Well, I mean, not really funny, but I guess it's amazing to watch the ways in which that team could give away games was just remarkable. So I don't think anyone expected this turnaround, especially me, given that I've been pretty hard on Danny Ainge because of his brain typing weirdness. Evidently, you guys listening may or may not know, but Danny Ainge makes all his player selections based on certain brain type evaluations, and one of the best ones is that Brian Scalabrine, who's the Celtic now, supposedly has the same brain type as Larry Bird, Michael Jordan, and I want to say Jerry West. So anyway, so when you're watching Brian Scalabrine, you can imagine him resembling those three players. Yeah, right. My big thing about the Celtics is whenever Scott Pollard and Brian Scalabrine are on the floor at the same time, I feel like our championship prospects are at least a year off. But the guys both play hard, but it's just not a huge amount of basketball skill between them as far as really producing. So one at a time on the floor is fine. Once you see them both on the floor, you're like, uh-oh. So those are a lot of the comments I had for this week for you. I'm not going to go too overboard on this week's broadcast. I'm hoping to start getting a little more organized with my callers and have some callers call in. And I did get emailed a topic that someone wants me to cover. I got a little more research on it, but I'll be commenting on some emails that I have received in the next week or two. And the final thing I want to do today is to read you a blog entry that I wrote. And the blog entry is about Greg Easterbrook. Now, Greg Easterbrook is a very famous sports writer. He writes for ESPN. His Tuesday morning quarterback has been a staple they actually fired him for a while, but he came back, and he's a non-sports writer, too. I think he's an editor of the New Republic. Anyway, I have some issues with Greg Easterbrook, and it kind of relates to some broader issues I have with how I think people should approach journalism. And so I think that's what's interesting about this blog entry is not necessarily the fact that I hate Greg Easterbrook, which is not hard to do if you're a Pats fan these days, but how I think Greg Easterbrook relates to the whole concept of fairness and objectivity in journalism. So with that in mind, I'm going to read you this blog entry I posted on my blog on johnreed.net. The goal of sports journalism is no different than any other form of journalism. Be as entertaining as possible while retaining a commitment to an exacting standard of fairness. It's not always easy to entertain and be fair to your subjects at the same time. Most of the worst sports commentary occurs when writers give in to their desire to empty all their arrows by entertaining instead of striving for journalistic objectivity. Greg Easterbrook, columnist of ESPN.com's Page 2, has been doing quite a lot of entertaining at the expense of fairness lately, and we'll get to him momentarily. But first, I want to hit on a broader point about journalism and objectivity. Historically, there's been a faulty notion in journalism that you can be totally objective in your presentation of the news. We now know that this is impossible, but unfortunately, when objectivity was discredited, the end result was sometimes the reverse, an abandonment of the very idea of fairness. Sloppy, opinionated, and poorly informed work that was a disservice to readers. As a writer, I continue to aspire to the high bar of fairness. It's a standard I know I can never consistently achieve, but I aspire to it nevertheless. One way to do that is by acknowledging your own subjectivity. By striving to understand and disclose your own biases, you have the best chance of overcoming them while alerting the reader to where your allegiances stand. I believe that the best journalists achieve something close to objectivity by fessing up to their own subjectivity, and then, in the process of defining the parameters of that subjectivity, they hopefully overcome it. Interestingly enough, in some quarters, there is still an infatuation with the notion that an old-fashioned objectivity is possible. Usually those who believe this are incredibly intelligent people who wrongfully assume that their vast intellect allows them to see all sides of an issue and relay it better than those with lesser intellects. I believe that this is the affliction the aforementioned Greg Easterbrook is suffering from. Greg is a gifted and wide-ranging intellectual. He knows more about football and, for that matter, many other subjects than I do. He is, in short, brilliant. But in his brilliance, he can also run circles around himself and fall victim to the notion that he has no base instincts and no petty hatreds of his own to overcome. But Greg certainly does. Greg, you see, is a closet Patriots hater and self-appointed accomplishment diminisher. And as a huge Patriots fan, I am in a position to have an especially strong reaction to his idiocy. It doesn't bother me that Greg has demonized the Patriots. What does bother me is that he has never had the guts to admit that he has an agenda to undermine the team and its accomplishments. In fairness, Greg has raised some important points about the extent of the so-called Spygate controversy and some of the related issues the NFL has swept under the rug. Unfortunately, agendas that are not acknowledged lead to many falsehoods and an unclear picture. Greg worships at the altar of the Indianapolis Colts, so as a result, he is unable to see that every team has good and bad individuals on it, and in fact, that most individuals struggle with moral complexities within themselves. He thinks Peyton Manning is a prince sent to this earth to play All-American football, whereas I tend to see Peyton in a more nuanced way, as a great leader who can get a little bitchy when things don't go his way, as a great comedic actor, if Saturday Night Live was any indication, who doesn't mind making fun of himself, but who also doesn't mind being a corporate whore for any oversized check with his name on it either. But the nut that is really stuck in my gum right now has to do with Greg's last column, where he diminished Tom Brady's exceptional season by asserting that Joey, why can't I get it together, Harrington would be a star also if he was playing behind New England's offensive line. Never mind that a football lifer like John Madden says that Tom Brady is playing the quarterback position as well as it's ever been played. It goes without saying that Greg knows a lot less about football than John Madden. That said, Greg still has the right to his opinion. But putting Tom Brady and Joe Harrington in the same sentence is not about forming a flawed opinion. It's about being a hater with a big old axe to grind. Keep on hating, Greg. I hope that the team you root for most winds up with Joey Harrington shortly. I'm not the first to criticize Easterbrook's pretentious and irresponsible columns. He has received a huge amount of negative feedback to the point that the ESPN ombudsman had to take the unprecedented step of rebuking him 2 months in a row for his borderline irresponsible journalism. I do give Greg a slight amount of credit for apologizing for his most extreme representation of the Colts as angels and the Pats as Satan. But his Harrington broadside occurred after that, so he has not learned his own self-taught lessons. I don't care that Greg feels an intense need to demonize, dismiss, or diminish the Patriots, but it bothers me greatly that he tries to do it in the guise of journalistic objectivity, as if he is the only one who sees that the Patriots have a great offensive line, and therefore Joey Harrington and Tom Brady can be mentioned in the same sentence. Actually, Greg, the thought had occurred to me too, but it was such an overwhelmingly stupid thought that I quickly dismissed it instead of featuring it in my column and patting myself on the back for being a contrarian. Greg is not alone in his absurdity. On all kinds of subjects and all kinds of forums, so-called journalists are aggressively pursuing their agendas without openly acknowledging the roots of their frustrations and the passion of their subjectivity. Two examples from the opposite side of the political spectrum, the grandstanding Michael Moore and the insufferable George Will. This is not a Republican or Democratic thing. It's an arrogance thing. And it's insulting to those of us who want to form our own conclusions based on well-thought insights and open disclosure. So, I'll conclude this blog entry by acknowledging the obvious. Yes, I am envious of Easterbrook's platform and the likely reality that he is financially well off enough that he doesn't have to do his writing when his eyes are burning up after an all-nighter of hard work to pay for the privilege to self-publish. I'll leave it to readers to decide if my subjectivity invalidates my opinions. But I'd like to think the fact that I'm willing to completely own the ugly side of what makes me tick lends more credibility, not less, to the rest of my perspective. I wish Greg Easterbrook would do the same, but I doubt he will be able to save his soul in this manner. He's too attached to his masturbatory intellectual virtuosity. Greg, I hope the Pats go 19-0. I hope the next time you are dreaming, you're running for a long pass with the Super Bowl on the line, and Joey Harrington overthrows you. Then we cut to a commercial, and Peyton Manning tries to sell you a range of products and services until the horror of your own hypocrisy wakes you like a screaming baby. So, that was my entry, which was actually entitled Greg Easterbrook Hates the Pats, and I Hate Greg Easterbrook. So I hope I've lived up to another installment of The Uncensored Week in Sports. I appreciate those listeners who are checking out my early broadcasts. I do post them in the archives, and eventually we'll have a page for them on one of my websites. And obviously I'm going to get better and better as I continue to do this. So I appreciate those who are willing to stick with me as I get more comfortable with this format and what I can do with it. I, of course, welcome all of your suggestions, and there's a number of ways to contact me. You can find me on the nowlive.com site, or you can find me on johnreed.net, johnreed.net. I also do a business show on Now Live called Free from Corporate America, which is based on my book of the same name that's coming out later this year. So once again, thanks for joining me on the Uncensored Week in Sports, and I look forward to catching up with you next week.